are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to, should, must do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you will get it done anyway. Because I know the kind of brother and sister that you is. You always get it done. You don't procrastinate. You don't put nothing off. You get it done. Love it. Love y'all for it. You're listening to the African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, brothers and sisters, you now can go to, thanks, Brother Kwaku, you can now go to timeforanawakening.com. Look to the far right for other programming. You hit on that. The drop down will have African Perspectives. Hit on that, and there will be programming that is dated and titled, and we're going to be putting some memes to it, all kind of good stuff, some good programs that we have done. And you have an opportunity to listen to those programs, just like the one we're going to do today. I'm very excited about today. I have a guest today. This is a young man. It's very impressive, and I'm quite sure you will agree when we go through the interviewing process. But let me get through these announcements. Let me get through all the stuff that I usually do before a program, and y'all hang tight because we're going to do this thing. It's going to be a really good program, a lot of good information. And so my guest will be Emmanuel Kulu Jr., I, Black Pharaoh. This is, once again, African Perspectives, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix. The Black People Matrix from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Mondays and Wednesdays, with the host, Brother Franklin Jones. On Monday evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern Times. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Acres of Diamonds. And right after Acres of Diamonds, from 8 p.m. to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, yesterday, last night, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. This evening, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, it ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program, Revive, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215 490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. And if you are in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall if you are in the Atlanta area. Check them out. They have detergent, toothpaste, toothbrushes, razors, batteries, all kinds of stuff. They're getting even clothing in. So WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tahemba, my good brother who came back from Ghana just recently, and he is going again. He's going to South Africa in November 22nd to December 2nd to Cape Town and Johannesburg. Then he's going to Ghana at the end of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020. He's going back to Ghana. Check out the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, or give brother a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Brother Bamani Tahemba. Oh, also, too, if you want to check out pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to check out video of previous tours and the most recent one, go to YouTube.com/Bomani 2007.
Shrine of the Black Madonna, where you can get books, clothing, furniture, the red, black, and green shoes, you name it, they got it. Located in the West End here in Atlanta, 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They even have an African Holocaust Museum, open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 noon to 7 p.m., Sunday from 1 to 3, and, of course, they even have a history class. They have a history class every Saturday, Know Thyself, open, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. But if you can't make that, but you like to get that information, they have a multimedia library. It is a very extensive multimedia library, brothers and sisters. Believe me, it's the most extensive cultural library of its kind, with over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, currently over 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. And you can have it in your possession. Call the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Call them, and they will get you that information, tell you how to get it. Another bookstore that I promote, of course, is Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. That's right. The kiosk is right there, and right across the aisle is the Medu Bookstore. The number to call the Medu Bookstore to find out if they have the book that you desire, and if they don't, they'll get it for you. It's 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Another good bookstore because it's my brother. That's right, Kazimde Ajamu Black Dot Cultural Bookstore, Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia, 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. That is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. They also have the red, black, and green shoes and all the kind of good stuff for you. Us Lifting Us, they had their radio broadcast last night, Us Lifting Us. Ulu, the Thursday night broadcast on Block Talk Radio at 9 p.m. The number to call, and remember to jot that down, is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789 every Thursday night. And, of course, Us Lifting Us is an economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, cooperative economics or family-centered economics. And we pulled our money together, and we have a cafe here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road. And we have coffee. We have African coffee, Cameroon Boyo, which is my favorite coffee. And I know I'm quite sure my guest has probably had some Cameroon Boyo. He's Cameroonian, but it is delicious. I love Cameroon Boyo, and, of course, Tanzanian, Kenya, Ethiopia, where coffee started, and all kinds of other good stuff that we have at Cafe Ulu. And everything that is at Cafe Ulu is produced by us, because it is us lifting us. We also have a delicious vitality drink, Ambrosia, created by Brother Novak Young. It is a vitality drink that has alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina, all kinds of good stuff. And it's very, very good for you. Vitality drink. To help with the work that Baba Barudi is doing, we're asking you to donate to Akabin Institute. Make check or money order out to Akabin Institute or whatever amount. Send it to P.O. Box 10786. P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to make a cash donation through PayPal or Cash App, please do so. $, then Yah, Y-A-A-M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, or PayPal.me, Cash App, or / Akabin Village. They deserve to be supported. And another entity that is doing great work is Sister Gabby, Gabrielle Amiral, in Haiti, in the northeastern region of Haiti, in the rural area, doing outstanding work. I contacted my friend, Sister Baina Bello, and I'm trying to make a connection. She's in Port-au-Prince. She's at the university. She's been a professor there. If you've seen the documentary 1804 or other, you can go online. Sister Baina, this is a beautiful sister, and she's strong, talking about what they have done to Haiti and Haitian people. But this sister, Sister Gabby, is doing great work. I mean, tremendous work in that region. And so go online to sonjay-haiti.org, S-O-N-J-E-A-Y-I-T-I.org. and see the outstanding work that this sister is doing in Haiti. In Yesesim, the book of revolutionary daily thought, I'm going to read three of them. Then I'm going to get to my guest. And the three I'm going to read are yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And I tell you, these are some real gems. That's why when I miss days, when I can't broadcast because of whatever reason, and of course today is my last day for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to try to do a broadcast remotely. We're going to try because I really want to maintain that contact with you, the listening audience, and what I'm trying to provide for us, and which of course is information to free our minds. That's what this program is about, brothers and sisters. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's point blank. That's it. And everything we do is discussed in that context. And one thing that really helps me in this program is what I got from Baba Baruti is the daily revolutionary thoughts of the Inyesesim. June 20th. You can't think easily if your life is a social thing. Dr. Ivan von Sertima. Our beliefs about the income range middle class membership falls into is often quite different from the official categories as defined by the federal government in the Tax Reform Act of even 1986, let alone today. Today it is deeper. It's more recent amendments and the media's various presentations of it. Middle class families are statistically defined as those who annual income fall within the range of $25,000 to $50,000. This means that if each individual in a couple is making $12,500 annually, before taxes, the whole income of one day out of five goes to taxes. They are considered middle class. What makes this worse is that 40% of the family income goes to direct taxes, an additional 9% goes to indirect taxes. So how realistic is this official middle-class status when compared to the material possessions we associate with being members of such a privileged club? Without great credit indebtedness, what are the chances that we will be seen, and apparently what we do like to be seen, yes, we do like to be seen, as members of the middle class? Upper-class families are classified as those making $50,000 or more a year. Can this even be close to purchasing the upper class lifestyle we image and imagine to reflect in? No. Affirm, I do not lie to myself using play to disguise reality. Affirm, I do not lie to myself using play to disguise reality. And even though I'm not sure when Baba Baruti wrote this comment on the quote by Dr. von Sertima, but brothers and sisters, you know, the income disparity in this country is ridiculous. When they say something, if they say middle class in general to the society, it's a hell of a lot different than it is to us. Thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. Middle class in the society of Caucasians now is $125,000. For us, it is about $75,000. So if you make $75,000 or more, you are considered that. But the bottom line is you will never be what is considered middle class by Caucasians. Understand that. June 21st. Any people who could embrace all that brutalization and keep together, who could undergo such dismemberment and resuscitate itself and endure it, and it could take the initiative in achieving its own freedom, is obviously more than the sum of its brutality and its brutalization. The author of The Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison. The spirit of our dead are back. We have demanded them. We have called them. Some of us unwittingly, some consciously, all desperately. But however done, we have called forth their power, their fierce resilience, their anger, their blood. We call out from Urugu. Urugu means Caucasian. We call out from Urugu's cultural wilderness because we are lost and must find our way home, or we will surely die. Our ancestors are an umbilical cord to the Creator and the universe. When we study our cultural traditions, rename ourselves, claim our space, practice ritual, pour libation, we call forth the power of our ancestors. We gather them to our souls. The ancestors cannot help us if we refuse to think for ourselves as African. Calling is a spiritual thing. It connects us with our past, present, and future. We should always speak through the wisdom and vision of the ancestors. Imprisoned Africans look through their bars, searching the dark night sky for freedom. Africans on desert islands obtain solace and hope, studying the horizon and dawn to dusk to dawn. Africans surviving in European chaos seek guidance from the ancients in their struggle to deliver their descendants from evil. Africans must know themselves in order to give their children living images of African power. Affirm, I am so much more than the sum of others' brutalization of me. Affirm, I am so much more than the sum of others' brutalization against me. June 22nd. It took sheer determination to be able to run 100 yards and remember all the mechanisms and the mechanics that go along with it. It took sturdy nerves and being a fighter to stay out there. A sister that I admire and love, Wilma Rudolph. We speak in honor of those African warrior scholars who have consistently proven their worth. We speak in honor of those at whose feet we humbly sit and study so that we can learn how to be warriors and for our people. We speak in honor of those Jegnas. Jegna, we should not use mentor. We should never use mentor. Because mentor in the Iliad, Homer in the Iliad, Odysseus or Ulysses gave his son over to mentor who abused his son. So we don't want a mentor. We want a Jegna. That is the African word for a teacher, Jegna. We speak in honor of those Jegna who know no way other than our African way, a way of our ancestors, who have done and continue to do all and more than their power to confront, battle, and destroy any who would take the knowledge of their third eye from our children. We speak in honor of those who unhesitatingly fought, fight, and will forever do battle for us, simply because we are their people. Our children are their children. Our spirits are one. We speak in honor of those who have unerringly paved the way on the battlefield, who made a way when we could not see our own ignorance and near comatose submission, who stood alone when we were too afraid or ignorant to answer the war horn. This praise song is for those who, since consciousness, have not committed treason against our ancestors, who have consistently stayed on the revolutionary path of deeply dedicated, uncompromising warrior scholars who honor our ancestors through everything they say and they do. Affirm, I honor those warrior scholar ancestors who have proven their worth. Affirm, I honor those African warrior scholars who have proven their worth. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes, kind of zip through there because I want to make sure I have time. I want to give a good amount of time to our guest, and I want you to be able to call in and talk with him to find out why he's doing it, how he's doing it, and what is the projections of what's going to happen with it. Brothers and sisters, may I introduce my guest, Brother Emmanuel Kulu Jr. Good morning, brother.
How you doing? How are you?
I am doing fine, my friend. I'm doing great. I'm very excited to talk with you today. I've been looking at your website, I, Black Pharaoh, looking at some of the stuff that you have already done and that you're doing. It is exciting, you know. So give me a little background, my brother, of who Emmanuel Kulu Jr. is.
Well, for myself, I am a major and a bachelor's major in social work, human services. My mother was a history teacher. My father is an African man from Cameroon. I was born in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, you were born in Buffalo. I saw that, man. You know, I love Buffalo. I've been to Buffalo, New York many times. I love Buffalo. We had a good, I'm a retired firefighter, and we had a good, strong black firefighter organization in Buffalo. For sure. Go ahead.
And they're still very strong. They're still very strong.
Is that right? The Buffalo Fire? Right on, man. Yeah, because they were doing a lot of good stuff in the community, man. Right on, Buffalo. Yep. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that's pretty much me, the motivation behind it. My mother was a black activist in the 70s, mm-hmm. African-American woman. My father, obviously, he's from Cameroon, so he instilled in us those strong African black roots. And as a growing up as a young man, it was tough to an extent, being that I was half African American and just half pure African. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our brothers at the time didn't particularly understand about Africa. So, and my name, last name being Kulu, it was a struggle for a lot of the brothers to understand that, you know, mm-hmm. about Africa, that we come from, the
right.
beauty of it.
Right.
Back then it was taught to us that we're bush people of the bush, and we live in jungles, and lions and tigers and stuff are in our backyard.
Oh my.
So, yeah. So, but growing up, I grew to embrace my Africanism. And I started in the hip hop community for about 15 years. And then I decided that I wanted to do something more educational to uplift my people. So I started to write a script on Shaka Zulu first. And then my second thing was going to be Kemet. So that's exactly how it began.
Did you, for your book, did you write a book or just a movie script, a screenplay on Shaka Zulu?
I wrote a screenplay
okay.
on Shaka Zulu.
Okay.
Just doing research. We're still gonna release it probably in book form first, probably next year or so. We wanted to start with Ancient Kemet because Ancient Kemet was the first world power mm-hmm. that the world has ever seen.
Right.
That being the case, I knew that this would bring a lot of controversy, but also a great enlightenment to the history of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And I think that it is time for it. As I said to you in our phone conversation, I've been waiting personally for somebody. I was hoping it would be some of the big name people, you know, whoever they might be, you know, even John Singleton before he passed would write a, or have a screenplay or produce a film, a featured film on Ancient Kemet, you know. And let me just say this right quick. I got to give Michael Jackson some props and some love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when he did Remember the Time, everybody in Remember the Time was African.
Yep.
You know, everybody, even him, of course, was African, although he looked white because he changed himself white. But to me, by him doing that, and I don't know a lot of people, you know, but I caught it right away. You know, because that's what it was.
Right.
That's what that civilization was for thousands of years. Thousands
and
of
that
years.
That depiction right there was one of the greatest depictions of African Egyptians ever.
Yes.
And probably the only one. But still, prior to that, and that was, what, 93 or 1993 or something
okay.
like that. It had never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So very courageous of Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I you know, that alone. I mean, Michael Jackson was an outstanding entertainer, aside from all the other things. And, of course, you know, grew up listening to the Jackson 5. They were from Gary, Indiana. I'm from Milwaukee. They came to Milwaukee at this place called the Academy of Center of Arts and performed, you know, just starting out, you know. And so I grew up with Michael Jackson. And then, of course, seeing the transformations that he made, you know, but one thing, there was still a level, aside from, one may say, the lunacy, but there was some seriousness about Michael Jackson, some understanding culture who Michael Jackson was, you know. And to me, making of that video, I will always thank him for that. I will always remember the time,
yep.
you know, for
yep.
sure.
I posted that actually on the I Black Pharaoh Facebook page, and we got a great response from it. A lot of people was very, I mean, of course you get your negative comments here and there, but a lot of people really appreciated what Michael Jackson did some 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As to that video.
You know, and what you're doing now, first you're writing a book on the 18th dynastic period of Queen Hatshepsut. And of course, Queen Hatshepsut, who ruled as a pharaoh for 21 years.
Yep.
Up until the time that Tutmosis' reign came into being. And you have chosen that particular period to write a book and to produce a movie on. I find it correct. Very exciting. I am very excited to see this and to read about
this. It's so beautiful, Brother Oshi, because first of all, in this book, you get to see the black woman who ruled for 20 years, as you spoke. The powerful black woman, and Hatshepsut was a woman of peace, a reign of great trading with other nations like the Nubians, the Cushites, the Canaanites, the Ethiopians. All of these people loved Hatshepsut. And then the transformation into Thutmose III, who was a great warrior, the greatest warrior king that Egypt had ever seen, as he conquered over 350 cities. So a lot of people refer to him as the Napoleon of ancient Egypt. One of the interesting stories.
Yeah, or they should say Napoleon was the Tutmosis.
Yeah, there you go.
Because Tutmosis was no joke, man.
No, he wasn't. Man. He was no joke, man.
But, then you got the 18th dynastic period, which you, even though you're focusing on just two people in the 18th dynastic period, is just loaded with just tremendous men and women. That period, that is the imperial age of ancient Kemet. Seti the first, the second, Ramesses the second, which is the Ramesses that everybody has some knowledge of based on the stories of biblical stories, but it's Ramesses. And of course, then Ramesses the third, what I give Ramesses the third some credit for is the relief in his tomb of four figures. Two figures are Kemet and Cush, and the other two figures are the Semites, which is the Indo-European, and the Indo-Europeans. So what he's saying in that relief, unequivocally, undeniably, Egypt and Nubians are the same. They're the same people. It's like cousins. Even though you live 1,000 miles to the... Yeah, that's right, you live... I'm here in Atlanta. You in Buffalo. And, that's what, 700 miles. But we still brothers. We still cousins. We still the same people. See? And so that's what that points to. And then, of course, the two other figures who are outside of ancient Kemet, Semitic people, one may call them Iranian or Iraqian, or they're coming from the East. They came from the East. And at a period of time, they did come into Kemet, the Hyksos. And they rule Kemet for 100-something years,
Right.
But when you look at the history of Kemet, that is but a blimp. And the fact...
Right, that was a small portion compared to 3,000 years.
Yes. And the only thing that they brought into Kemet was the horse and chariot, because they did not affect the culture. One thing that I like about what you're doing is that you're presenting the Kemetic culture to people who don't understand how dynamic it was, how beautiful it was, how structured it was. That culture was so strong. The culture was, it did not change with the Hyksos. It did not change with the Greeks. It did not change with the Romans. It only changed after hundreds of years of being desolate when Islam came on the scene. When Islam spread through North Africa, that's when the culture changed. The culture was so strong. In fact, when the Greeks came to study at the feet of African people, that culture was so strong. When Socrates went back to Greece, and the people in Greece said, "What are you doing bringing these concepts? You're talking about this, that, and the other." They made him drink poison. They made him drink hemlock. Plato...
To follow up with what you're saying, Aristotle spoke about the ancient Egyptians. He was a Greek philosopher. You're talking about Aemilius Marcellinus, who said the ancient Egyptians were black and brown with a skinny, desiccated look. You got Herodotus, who they call, the Greeks call, the father of history. They said, he said that they were black skinned with woolly hair. Even the ancient Greeks knew who the ancient Egyptians were.
Exactly.
That's why it's so, when they say these things about that only crazy Afrocentrics people believe that these people were black, as they tried to put that title on Brother Anti Diop, Dr. Anti Diop as well.
Mm-hmm. And see, the reality is, and when you spoke about Jop, we owe him a great debt of gratitude, because I think it is he, along with the linguistic Dr. Theophilo Benga, who I've met because I'm a member of ASCAC, and he would present at ASCAC, and Diop or Jop, he did the work. They did the work. When they went to that symposium in 1974 in Cairo, they kicked ass. They kicked ass. Because all those Europeans who have been for hundreds of years claiming Egypt has a European. In fact, I do a presentation where Henry Breasted, who was a historian, who used to write objectively about the ancient people of Kemet, but because he wanted to create a museum in Chicago, the Oriental Museum, which is there today, he needed benefactors. He needed people with money. And these people with money were not going to go along with a black ancient Egypt, because they have been firmly embedded in them that the ancient Egyptians were Caucasian. That's how they wrote their books. That's how they had movies from ancient times, even to this present day. So right. They were not going to follow or go along with that. So he came up with this great white race. And when you see the barriers of the great white race, number one, they use Europe and call it a continent. Europe is not a continent by any definition, but they say there's seven continents. There's not seven continents, there's only six. Europe is not a continent, but that just shows you how arrogant, how bold Europeans are. If I say it's a continent, damn it, it's a continent. You know, because it is not a and what makes it the European continent is the divide between East Asia and West Asia, the Caucasus Mountains. So west of the Caucasus Mountains is Europe, which is So anyway, you know, that Dr. Jop, he said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic people were African, were black. And I think the main thing that he came up with, he said, I have 10 ways to prove it. I think the most potent, or the smoking gun, so to speak, was the melanin dosage test. He could extract from the mummies the melanin and to determine how and what levels they were. And that's right. What did it. That's what did
absolutely.
It. But you know,
and there was also some DNA, inconclusive DNA tests that were done on King Tut's tomb that has been discredited, that was also tried to connect to 70% European, which came out inconclusive anyway. So that was discredited quickly as they took that back. Then they come out with these Hollywood perspectives of gods of Egypt, gods and kings, where blacks are depicted as slaves and the people who look like Christian Bale are the kings at that time, which is just so false from the truth. And if you know anything about how films are made, you have a person who puts together a casting crew. And what they do is they come up with the whole scheme of who's who. Came up with this. This is how they depicted people. The slaves were black, just like in America. And the Egyptian kings and pharaohs and queens were Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
And they perpetuate this propaganda through the media, and they've been doing it for years and years. A brother named, two white men, Thomas Brophy and Robert Ruval, they wrote an excellent book that I advise everybody to go get. It's called Black Genesis. It's actually how they believed that they spoke, actually they can even prove it, that most of the ancient Egyptians originated in Sudan. And in Sudan are some of the darkest people in Africa, period. Which Sudan is also along the Nile, Uganda, Ethiopia, all of these people were similar-looking people. Now, you mentioned about Ramses, his tomb, which identified the Levites, or some would say the Asians or Indian-looking people, or also maybe the Israelites. And then they identified the Nubians and the Egyptians, and they looked just the same.
Exactly.
Looked just the same in his tomb, that he found no different. Now, if you would go to Cairo, you would hear people saying to you, they'll tell you, that do you see Ramses or King Tut got Nubians under his feet, these black skin? But they also don't realize King Tut portrayed himself to be black, the same complexion. And these reconstructions of these National Geographics of King Tut's face, making this French-looking King Tut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you go into that. That's part of it. Then they say, well, we can't seem to erase the black history from ancient Egypt, so let's give them the 25th dynasty. Well, I'm sorry to tell everybody who is listening that may believe that that was the only black form. But no, that was the only time maybe that the Kushites and the Kemet and the people of Kemet were together, united as one. But that was not the only black reign in Egypt.
No, it was
all of them were black.
Exactly. And people need to look at the works of warrior scholars of our people who have done this work for the last 30, 40 years. In fact, when Jop came to America, he was here in Atlanta and met with Dr. Jacob Carruthers. They had a long conversation, and Dr. Carruthers told him to learn the Medunecer, what the Greeks call hieroglyphs. Learn the Medunecer. Our people have spoken to us. You know, our ancestors have spoken to us. And so go learn. And so many of our people begin to learn them so we could see for ourselves and read for ourselves. You know, then other great scholars did some good work. And my good friend, Brother Renoko Rashidi, who has been doing work for decades, going around the world, documenting the African presence in various places that you would not think there were African presence would be. But the reality is that we are the first people on the planet. We are the first people everywhere because of the series of migrations. And one thing that became very true to me in my studies is that through these series of migrations, one thing is clear, that the Kemetic, the Indus Valley, the Valley of the Kings and Queens, the Olduvai Gorge area, of Central East Africa is the origin of humanity. And since humanity began there, civilizations began there, that's what you were just talking about. They came from the Sudan. They came from, you know, the northern part of the Sudan. They came from the south. That's why when the ancient Kemetic people, the Egyptian people, would bury their people, they turned their face south because they knew they came from the south. Their word for face and word for south are the same. They knew where they came right. from, you see. So, right. you know, even though Europeans who have dominated information, and even though Jop in 1974, or 40-some years ago, the debate was won. It'll be 50 years, 2024. 50 years since the debate was won, but yet and still today, when you see movies like you just mentioned the Gods of Egypt with Gerard Butler and all those other Caucasians, or the Exodus with Christian Bale as Moses and some Arab looking dude as Ramesses and some little Caucasian kid as a spirit, or when you see, you know, all the other dramatizations, illustrations on PBS and Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, National Geographics. Still, today, if there's a dramatization or illustration about ancient Kemet, the people will look white. But if they show somebody serving somebody, just as you said earlier, they're going to look African, because what they wanted to do is to consistently and to further put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a servant to Caucasians.
And servitude has always, and this is the thing, they want to perpetuate this belief that the Nubians and the Egyptians were different, and they try to use skin complexion as the difference. No, what was the difference between the Nubians and the Egyptians was not skin complexion. The difference was some of their belief systems. And in fact, in Nubia, there's more pyramids in Nubia than there is in Egypt.
That's right.
So they were very similar when it comes to architecture, when it comes to certain beliefs, but they were different also as to what gods they believed in. And this was the difference. There was not, you look different from me, so we're going to go to war. No, there's many tribes, hundreds of tribes in the whole continent of Africa that did not get along. So if they wanted to believe that all Africans got along, that just was not the case. So, no, at a point in time, the people of Kemet and the people of Nubia did not get along at a period of time. So they were not united. So when you talk about invasions, you're talking about the Assyrians. You're talking about the Babylonians.
Right.
You're talking about the Vandals.
Right.
You're talking about the Berbers. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're talking about people totally outside of the Nile Valley. Because when you're talking about Nile Valley, whether you're talking about Sudanese or you're talking about Cushites, Nubians, all the same. Egyptians, they are all the same people. They are different regions, and just as you stated, different beliefs. Because they are, you're right. The pyramids in the Sudan are more pyramids, and they're older. It's just that the ancient Kemetic people perfected pyramid building, and they built on a grand scale. You know, when you look at what Ramesses II did, that guy was an egomaniac, wasn't he? I mean, he really...
he loved to show his glory.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Persians. We talk about how the Greeks, like you mentioned earlier, how the Greeks studied under Egyptian history, learning the mathematics, learning astrology, learning systems of writing. Look on the back of the dollar bill. You see the pyramid there.
That's right.
Which started in like we mentioned, Nubia, Sudan, and Kemet. And a lot of people don't know, 70% of the gold that Egypt had came from Kush, which is modern-day South Sudan. That was, and then also, I don't know how many people know about the Mali people, Mansa Musa, who was
the richest man in the history of the world.
These people today who are currently in Cairo, because I still believe that the people in Aswan, the Sahara, Alexandria, a lot of those people are black.
Right.
And they are the actual descendants of these original people who look very similar to Ethiopian people.
Yes.
And also the people of Sudan. So when you're talking about when the Greeks came in, then the Romans came in, Cleopatra was the last of the pharaohs, and she was a half Greek person, but that was pretty much the cutoff.
Right.
Right there where you started to see different pharaohs sitting into different race pharaohs sitting into the place of the original pharaohs.
Right. Because that's good. So now you get it, you know, once the Greeks came in and the Greeks sat at our feet and we maintained the culture, you know, Alexander, the so-called great, and his group, the Ptolemies, even when he died, he didn't want to go back to Greece. He wanted to be buried there, you know, because the culture was so strong. And many of the things that you had seen in Greece came out of Kemet. And then, of course, it was open theft and plagiarism. Of course, when he died, and then the Library of Alexandria was open to them, and they just start saying, "I'm the father of this, and I'm the father of that, and I'm doing, you know, complete plagiarism." But it's the ancient Kemetic people where the origin of it was. And so then after the Greeks die off, then the Romans come in, and that's where you get Cleopatra VII, who wanted to maintain the culture of Kemet through the Ptolemies against Rome, against Caesar and Octavian and with Michael, with Mark Anthony and so forth. So because the culture was so strong. And then, of course, right. you know, once that was done, then but the culture never changed until Islam came on the scene, yeah. the spread of Islam. And, of course, they had no knowledge of ancient Kemet. And so, you know, they did what they did. They destroyed a lot. They destroyed a lot of temples. They took the limestone covering off the pyramids to make mosques and things like that because there was no respect right. for the culture. You know, only up to this present day is there really a respect from us. I don't give a damn about whites. Anybody else outside? I care about us. Is there a respect for this culture coming from African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora for what it has done? Because to me, ancient Kemetic culture is a bedrock of possibilities right. of what we can do.
Even Professor McDonald from America, he's currently a ancient African archaeologist, and he spoke on this. This is a white man, and he spoke on the misconception of ancient Africa. You know, so there are those of other races who are speaking out about how Africa has been colonized in different regions. And let's get this clear about Africa. African people were always very welcoming people.
Right.
To spread our knowledge.
Right.
Sometimes, most of the time, to our detriment.
That's right. To a fault.
Our knowledge
truly, to a fault. I agree with you.
Yeah. To spread the things that we knew. Spirituality, like we talked about, mathematics, architecture. When Napoleon came into Egypt and he saw these buildings and these monuments and these statues of these big black men, scared him. First thing he sought to do was to blow off those noses. 1,776 that they've counted. And that's not including the Egyptian art that was stolen from Egypt,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which was countless.
Sure.
Professor Zahi Hawass, who was a leader in that, who is in a modern-day Egyptian, you would say,
right?
That has kind of strong-held Egyptology, so to speak, in preventing people from understanding that the pharaohs were black-skinned people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dr. Hawass, who you're talking about, he was featured many times on all of the programs, the documentary programs, particularly about ancient Kemet. He was considered the authority and taught at the University of Cairo and curator of the Cairo Museum and so forth. And he would always talk about that it was not African, that it was a mixed-raced civilization, you know. And, of course, once again, even though Diop or Jop proved otherwise, see, but we got to understand something, Brother Emmanuel, that Europeans and those who think and act like Europeans, they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They have a core belief that they are superior and they have done everything and ain't nobody done a damn thing but them of any note or worth. And so if you have proof otherwise, they're going to dismiss it and ignore it because it doesn't go along with their core belief. It causes a bad feeling, which is, of course, called cognitive dissonance. But they also suffer from a couple other things. There's a Caucasian lady right after the upheavals that were happening with Trayvon Martin, Oscar Grant, Tamir Rice, and so forth. And so she was doing workshops with Caucasian people. And what she began to realize is that they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear how they stole, robbed, killed, maimed. They don't want to hear how they did things because they want to believe that they're good people. They're good moral people. And what they did was a benefit to the world. So she says they suffer from white fragility. They're fragile. I call it Caucasian fragility because they ain't white, we ain't black. But, you know, that they don't want to hear it. But guess what, my brother? They sure in hell don't want to hear it from you. They definitely don't want to hear from us about what they have done to us.
I think there's been a great awakening, and because the awakening, a lot of our Caucasian brothers and sisters, friends, people that we know, and especially the in Asia, the Asians have really awakened to this because they've already been known this knowledge.
Okay.
But a lot of them have awakened to it and opened up to it. DreamWorks, I want to send a shout out to DreamWorks for making a Prince of Egypt, because they depicted them as they were, as black people. You know, so
in the animation.
It was a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cartoon.
Right.
But they depicted them, ancient Egyptians, as black people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and that's a very historical film, by the way, for a lot of the kids out there that want to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend that. But again, when you look at all these other films that have come out about Egypt, you've seen the propaganda being perpetuated constantly that these people were not black people. And these some people, they will argue to the death. And if you could go inside my inbox and see the hate mail from people in Cairo, or some people in Cairo, you can see it from people in the United States. Just the racist things that they say, that you black people were under our feet, you were this, you were that, y'all not known for nothing but the bush, y'all not intelligent enough to have created this stuff.
Right.
And what people don't understand about being an African American person or an African person, black people all over the world have suffered oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just Africa. We're talking about India.
Mm-hmm.
Black Indians have suffered oppression. Mm-hmm. Native Americans suffered oppression. Mm-hmm. Anyone of the dark races, period, has suffered oppression.
And that's happened because of the advent of a European Caucasian. I don't call it white supremacy. This is what I call it: European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. There's only one form of racism, and that is it. Because there's no such thing as race. There's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. But listen, we're going to get deeper into this conversation, and we're also going to talk about the book and the film and the possible dates that it may be coming out so our people could know. And I want to maintain this contact with you, my brother, because I'm excited about what you're doing. So we're going to take this break, okay? And we're going to be right back. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Today being the first day of summer, we got some Kool & the Gang Summer Madness followed by some Will Smith Summertime. You stay right here with us. We'll be right back with our conversation with Brother Emmanuel Kulu Jr.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix. And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme. And put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. And checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you up and get you equipped for the summertime. Set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair. Cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more. Cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kiss. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop, apply from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through, 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're talking with Brother Emmanuel Kulu Jr. about his book and upcoming film, I, Black Pharaoh, and I want to get more information because I'm excited. So I'm very excited about this. Like, as, just as I stated to you, I was hoping that somebody else would do it, but you know what? You're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, I, Black Pharaoh, You can check us out. We're on all the social media sites. We're on Facebook. It's iBlackPharaohUniverse. You can also connect with me. I don't think I've maxed out on friends on Facebook just yet. Just Emmanuel Kulu. You can look me up. Twitter, iBlackPharaoh. Instagram, iBlackPharaoh. On those pages, we post just the great history of Egypt, the monuments, the black faces on behind the gold tombs. We're printing that. We're also pushing just different depictions of different models who've come forth. So if you have some pictures of yourself that would look like an Egyptian queen or Egyptian king, please send them to me. And if they are high quality enough, we'll definitely post them up.
Ashe.
And then, of course, the iBlackPharaoh.com. You can go there and hit the contact. If you want to contact me, join our team, or just want to be part of the email list to receive when the book is released. We're looking at maybe November, latest February 2020.
Okay.
And while we're saying latest February 2020, which is kind of ideal because it's Black History
Month, right, exactly.
We would love to do it that time. But we do want to get this out as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So many people have been inquiring. We got over 15,000 different people who have subscribed to the page.
Outstanding.
That are very much interested. And of course, you got your haters, okay? So, you know.
Yeah, bump them.
Love y'all too.
Exactly. Bump them. Because, you know, the haters are going to hate. And you're going to have a lot of that coming from all kinds of directions outside right. of us, with inside of us. So you're going to have that happening. But the bottom line is stay this particular course because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is necessary. Because once this book comes out, people started to read it, then hopefully there will be some benefactors. There may be some other people that will come your way with the expertise and the resources to make this into a feature film, you know.
Right.
And I pray and hope that happens, you know, because when you see us depicted correctly, you know, in film, it gives a better perspective and a more right. understanding perspective of what history is and what the truth is, you know. And so, like I said, you know, I would love to see a movie about Queen Hatshepsut and Tutmosis, you know.
Well, the thing is, what inspired this also, as I didn't mention, was the Black Panther. The Black Panther definitely was an eye-opener to the beauty and the want to see African history. Yeah. It opened up that. But here's my only knock on it. Of course, it's Wakanda. It's a made-up African country.
Right. Wakanda forever, though.
Real.
yeah.
Wakanda but forever. I love Black Panther. Shout out to Marvel Comics for doing that.
Sure.
You know, but at the same time, I wanted to do something that was real
right.
historical.
Right.
You know, that's a true story.
Exactly. And so even though you're right that happened, and of course, the storyline is Marvel, and Marvel really ain't us, but yet and still the depictions were cool and everything like that. But it's nothing like coming from our perspective, and that it is right. historical, that is real, and that is, to me, is necessary. You know, when I was watching the Mummy movies and Brandon Fraser and, right. you know, the evil character, aside from the Scorpion King that The Rock played, but the other evil character, his name was Imhotep, you know. And so if your child and you didn't know who the real Imhotep was of the fourth dynasty, an advisor to the Pharaoh Khufu, of the fourth dynasty, you know, and the builder of the Step Pyramid, who was the world's first multi-genius, then you would think that Imhotep was an evil person who ripped the pharaoh off of his lady and was, you know, going to wreak havoc on the earth. You know?
Mm-hmm.
See? So to me, these movies that I have seen over, you know, course of my life, I'm over 65, I'm 67, but I'm saying is that I've seen these things, and never, if it's done by Europeans, is not going to be objective, and it's shown in hell, even though it claims to be historical, it is not. Because
you know, they can't write the history correct because it is just not in them, you know. But just as you stated earlier, there are some Caucasians who are objective, who will probably, you know, and I'm hoping that some of those Caucasians will be willing to put some money behind you and not influence you, of course, but put some money behind you to tell the real story.
Well, currently, you know, I've been in talks with some of, you know, people I won't name on in Paramount Films and as well as Disney, that they would like to see what the book does first. So when the book comes out, we need everybody to go out there and support it. As if the book does very well, it will force them to make this a movie. Mm-hmm. And they want to make these movies because if you go back to 1986 where Shaka Zulu, the TV series came out, Shaka Zulu series was the most seen TV series worldwide of its time.
Well,
and still to this day.
Yeah, well, understand. Still to this day. Right, understand something. We want to see ourselves. So, and also, too, the curiosity of Caucasians is just like when the Root series came out in 76. You know, it was the most widely watched series in television history at that time. You know? And, of course, that was a not a true perspective on what had happened either. But but I'm saying, listen, brother, I'm saying, you know, if Disney don't do it, none of them do it, we do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do it. We back you. We put this up because this is our story. This is our history. This is part of our legacy, our lineage. This is us. This is and the fact is, it's not fairy tale. It's not allegory. It's not myth. This is based on historical fact.
Correct.
You know.
And also, if you want to look at what has been told about the African story, most, I'm not going to say all, but most of the published books that have come out or films or whatever you want to say have that are about Africa were not told by an African.
Right.
Or an African American.
Right.
That, you know, so this is very big for us as a culture, as a people, that for the first time, we will be able to tell our story. If you go back to even the Shaka Zulu 1986, which was a classic, I love it. It was told by Joshua Sinclair, who's not an African.
Okay.
Who's not an African man. So in a lot of these stories, Hannibal Barker, how many times have they tried to whitewash Hannibal?
Yeah. In fact, they did it last night. They did it last night on Jeopardy. They sure the hell did. I was watching Jeopardy. They're having a high school tournament, you know, because I watch Jeopardy a lot of times after the news. And so they had a question about, you know, and they showed a picture of an elephant, you know, because that's what Hannibal did. Hannibal left out of Carthage, which is present-day Libya, and marched through the strait and over the Alps into Italy, you know, bringing the war to them. And that's why they said the Carthaginians must be destroyed, you know. But, yeah, they you know, had him as Caucasian. But, of course, that I understand that. That's what they're going to do, you know. But that's
if
them.
If you see the actual coin of Hannibal Barker, yeah, I mean, you can see that's a black man.
Yeah.
You know, he had coins that had his face on it. He was a black man. He had afro hair. He had woolly hair. Maybe dreads.
Sure.
And small dreads in his head.
But Brother Cooler, what it is for Europeans, for Caucasians, is plausible deniability. That's what it is. They like the term plausible deniability and all these other possibilities that it could be, you know, because they don't, like I said, they suffer from cognitive dissonance and they're fragile. The other thing they suffer from, European hegemony, which is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. You know, that's their mindset. You know, they must dominate. They must have control. And so, therefore, if there's something that you are presenting that goes against what I have presented, you know, I'm going to make sure that what you're presenting is discredited, what is it possibly even never told or eliminated, you see. Uh-huh. But we must do it. It is imperative, brother, that we must do this. Our children must see who they truly are. Our grandchildren must see who they truly are. So it's important that we do this kind of work, you know.
Right.
Because if we're going to
even in the biblical sense, you know, mm-hmm. ancient Egyptians were considered to be mostly brown people, the descendants of Ham, mm-hmm. Who were the father, who was the father of all races, the people of Cush, which is Nubia, Canaan,
right.
Mizraim, which is what the Arabs were to call refer to the ancient
Mizraim.
Egyptians. So,
right.
Ludum, Labathan, and all of these other people that were descendants of Ham.
Mm-hmm.
These are all the different
but see, what's
forms
that but
came
see,
up.
But see, even life. What's interesting about that is that, you know, here you have, okay, sin running rampant on the earth and just acting, everybody acting a damn fool. And so God says, well, you know what? I'm tired of this. So I'm going to find a honorable person, Noah, and he's going to take his three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their three wives, and Noah's, of course, his wife, and I'm going to have him build an ark. And then at the appointed time, animals will be coming two by two, and I'm going to make it rain for 40 days and 40 nights, and I'm going to wash everything else out, you know, and then I'll have the ark land after a dove, first a raven is released, the raven come back, he don't come back because that means that it's still bad out there. Then the dove comes back with an olive branch that announces peace on the earth. The ark lands, Noah builds a vineyard, he gets drunk. Ham sees him drunk, does not cover his father's nakedness, tells his two brothers, his brothers do it. Then when Noah comes up out of that drunken stupor, finds out what Ham had done, talks to Ham, and then says, okay, I'm going to curse you black and to be servants unto your brothers. That's where they get this idea that we are supposed to be slaves. But what is interesting is that the area of Canaan, which is comes from Ham, is what is now present day Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That is the land, you see.
Yes.
And so, you know, honestly, brother, on this program, I challenge it. I challenge the theology, particularly Christianity, because it purports itself to be historical. And there's no way in hell that it is historical, that is not historical. But I challenge it. But even if it was, you know, some of the things are hard to believe. And another thing is this, my good brother, we are not cursed. We are not a cursed people. We are not cursed. We could not have done what we have done as African people and been the light of the world. We created science, mathematics, you know, architecture, music, writing, law, religion. We did all of that. People came to sit at the feet of us to learn. And we didn't diss them. We didn't disrespect them. We taught them. Even when we went other places.
Right.
We didn't
the
come,
Marsh.
Yes, we didn't come taking people's stuff. We came to share, not even this hemisphere. When we came to this hemisphere, the Olmec heads, and the fact that there are pyramids in this hemisphere. You see, so, you know, we have to understand that what you are doing is vitally important. I'm serious, because we need to resurrect. We need to present the history of African people and told by us honestly, correctly, because we need to see it. We need to read it. We need to feel it, because we've been far too long. Like I said, even though Jop did that in 1974, still today, these Caucasians don't want to write the history right because it goes against what they believe. And they truly want to believe and have in their possession the greatest civilization that has ever been on this planet, lasting over thousands of years.
And we will, and I, Black Pharaoh Universe, our company, we will be telling the story of Shaka Zulu also.
Oh, great.
Like I said,
good.
We want to start with Kemet.
Mm-hmm.
We will be telling the story of Hannibal Barco. We will be telling these stories about Mansa Musa.
Yes.
We will be digging up all this. See, Black Pharaoh is not just about Kemet.
Okay.
You know, it starts with Kemet because Kemet was the most powerful African nation. But we are going to go into South Africa, Zululand. We're going to,
yes.
To be honest, my father is from the Bantu tribe, which are descendants of the Zulus.
Okay.
So that's where my heart originally was to do. That's why I wrote the script first. But we kept running into conflict with Harmony Gold, who owns the rights to the Shaka Zulu, 1986 Shaka Zulu film.
Okay.
So we kept running into too many things in regards to that. So I would have to completely do something different. And that novel is going to be called The Assassination of Shaka Zulu.
Okay.
There's a perspective that Shaka Zulu was murdered by his own people, was killed and betrayed and murdered by his own people.
Okay.
And the people of the Zulus do not believe that as well.
Okay, so, they don't believe it, but now there has been something out there like that, and that's what you're researching to do this particular film?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. I know that that's the impression it left from the series. But like you said, you know, at that time in the 80s, everybody watched that series. I was at the firehouse. I'm a retired firefighter, and I didn't miss in fact, watched it over again. Because, number one, I knew about Shaka Zulu. I knew his courage. I knew that, you know, he didn't capitulate to the Europeans. You know, he fought, even though
they were encroaching. You know what Shaka Zulu said, that I love his favorite quote? And I told you this when we talked. He said, they said to the Europeans came to Shaka Zulu, said, if you don't worship our God, you'll be cast into the lake of fire. Shaka Zulu said, well, around here, we eat fire.
I love it.
So, you know, that was one of the most famous Shaka Zulu quotes that was written down.
Yeah.
But it, you know, that's to show that spirituality was already in Africa.
Spirituality, you know, originates in Africa. It has been corrupted and imposed upon the world by Europeans.
I've heard the most craziest thing, Brother Oshie, about Egypt recently. I've heard some things, but I'm gonna put this out there for everybody, just so you can see the hatred towards Africans creating anything like an Egyptian empire. I was told that ancient aliens, the Egyptians were ancient aliens instead of black people.
Yeah.
They were aliens who had dark skin. They weren't people. They weren't you Africans. They were just dark-skinned aliens.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe my ears.
Well, they've been pushing that. They've been pushing that since this cat came out with this book called Chariots of Fire. They could not fathom or believe that we could do what was done in the Nile Valley and do what was done in Africa. Even when the Europeans went into Southern Africa, into Zimbabwe, and saw those walls that were built there, they fantasized about some Caucasians doing it or, as you stated, some aliens doing it, because that's what they stated in the book, The Chariots of Fire. That's what happened in the movie Stargate, where they supposedly went through this thing and going back into time. And of course, when you look at that movie, you know, they have the anthropomorphized characters, you know, of Set and Heru with a hawk head and so forth, you know, and of course the people who were being worked by the entity were, of course, looking Hebrewish, if I want to use that word. They weren't looking African. You know, I don't know if you saw that movie, Stargate. You know,
I didn't.
Okay, well, check that out. Yeah. Yeah, check that movie out. In fact, when you check it out, give me a call sometime next week, man, and we'll talk about that. But once again, they're always depicting, you know, themselves as the rulers, the conquerors, the ones of most intelligent, and us in a subservient position, you see. That is their modus operandi, you know. That is the way they roll, you know. They would
if
never.
If you look at some of these other films, let's talk about zombie films. Let's talk about the vampires, who were these people who were afraid of the sun. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, that, yeah. that had blood in their mouth from eating raw fish and raw meat. You know, that mm-hmm. craved blood. Who were these people?
Mm-hmm.
These were African stories written about the people in the Caucasus Mountains.
Right.
Who were these people?
Yeah.
If you look at these movies, these people come into the sun, they instantly burn. They instantly die. This was a perception of what Africans viewed Caucasians at the time.
Well, we got to understand the human evolution. Obviously, because there could be some missing pieces, it is not exact. But logically, we're saying that human life, Homo sapiens sapien, just like what me and you are, left out of East Africa and began to migrate and populate the planet. So what makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to environments. So whatever environment they find themselves in, because if they don't adapt, they're going to die. And so when Africans moved up into what is now called Europe, being cut off by an ice age about 50,000 years ago, they adapted. They mutated. Neanderthal is a mutation of what we were coming out of Africa into what is now called Europe. They had to, because that climate became very harsh. So no longer did you need a slender, dark-skinned body with close curled hair, broad nose, and thick lips. Your body became stocky, a lot of fat on it for insulation. Your hair became stringy and long, particularly long to cover the back of your neck. So the blood from your heart could flow to your brain. You know, all kinds of other adaptations were happening. And because of the environment, it also environment shapes your mentality, shapes your behavior. So the behavior that we had, that's why in Africa there was a complementarity between men and women. Because in Africa, if the man was acting stupid, she'd be like, bump you. I can go down the ways. There's better fruit, better water, and a better environment than staying here with yourself. Bye. But in Europe, because of its cold, it's dark, it's very harsh, not a lot of vegetation, not a lot of things. So the woman had to acquiesce to the man. That's why really, when you study this, European culture is war culture. European culture is rape culture. They have no respect for women. They had no respect for each other. That's why they see you with a kill. It wasn't like, hey, what's going on, man? Can I have a little something, something? No, man. No. Yeah, sure. We always. No, uh-uh. Selfishness, greediness. That's why you see what's happening today. Europeans, they're incapable of being the human beings that they should be because of their evolutionary development. Some are. I've worked with some good men and women. Caucasians. I ain't talking about them. I deal with the Caucasian collective, and the Caucasian collective's mindset is to suppress, to undermine, to destroy, to co-opt. And that's just a fact, my brother. I would love for us to live in a world where we all can live and love freely in, but that is not the case, because as long as Europeans are in control, and they are, you have this dog-eat-dog mentality. You have this survival of the fittest mentality. You know,
when you look at the resources that were in Europe and you compare them to the resources that were in Africa, you're talking about diamonds, gold, sapphire, your ivory, you're talking about petroleum, you're talking about coffee, you're talking about so many different copper, you're talking about all these different resources. And you look at that continent as a whole, and you say to yourself, what did other nations surrounding Africa have to gain? All those resources that you see today
right.
in the world that we use on cell phones,
that's right.
That we use today for jewelry, that's what they had to gain. that we use to fuel our cars. That's what they had to gain, and that's why they had to get into Africa.
Right.
And we let them in.
Right,
we let them in with very little resistance.
Right, because we're a friendly people. We're a friendly people.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah. When you look at what Diop said about the two-cradle theory of human development, the two-cradle theory of human development, the northern cradle, the Europeans, the southern cradle, us. They are xenophilic. Excuse me, they're xenophobic. They have a fear of other people. We're xenophilic. We welcome people in. We have no fear. There were so many positives on our side and so many negatives on their side, which created the mentality that they have. So they wanted what we had, and they will kill us to maintain it. They will destroy us to make sure that they continue to have it. Let me say this to you, brother. On this program, I advocate, and I will do this too, I expire, that we should be in control of African land and African resources. The Chinese shouldn't, the Arabs shouldn't, or the Indians shouldn't, and show in the hell the Europeans should. Nobody should be in control of Africa's land and resources but Africans. But because, just as you said earlier, African people are despised. Dark-skinned people are despised globally. And one of the things that helped make that happen is European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, because they are the ones who are in control of what? Imagery, media, information. They're the ones that throw that information out there about all the negative things that we are not. You see?
About $2.2 trillion worth of resources being robbed annually.
Yes.
$2.2 trillion dollars annually being robbed from the continent of Africa.
That's why Africa is not poor. Africa is not poor. Africa is being looted. And because of all of this theft, Africans suffer. There is no way in hell. See, let me say this to you again, dear brother. Once again, I advocate for sovereignty. I advocate for independence. I advocate for Africans on the continent is to throw off the tribalism, throw off the mysticism, throw off the bull, and come together as one Africa. Kwame Nkrumah said this. Patrice Lumumba said this. We just mentioned Diop. Jop said the same thing. They wrote information on it. They understand that in order for us to come into the real light of who we are, we must unite. It ain't about Cameroon. It ain't about Ghana or Nigeria or Southern Africa or Zimbabwe or Kenya. It is about Africa has won. You can keep your traditions. You can keep your customs. But we must come together to secure the land for our future and the resources for us to be players in the world instead of the pawns that we have become. You see, that's why to me a movie like what you're doing, and I like to see those movies, and then a movie about our future in that vision, in that direction, where African says, because of who we once were and because of what we have done, here's who we are coming into existence of today, a powerful
and people.
People
also don't realize, Brother Oshie, that ancient Egyptians had electricity.
They did. That's why they were able to paint in some of those tombs. When you go in some of those tombs, it wasn't just a fire, because they didn't have You couldn't keep a fire on, because what does fire need to continue to burn? Oxygen, air. Some of those places, the air was very little, but the colors are vivid. The colors are beautiful. The drawings are magnificent, because you're right. There's so many
paint that lasts over 3,000 years.
Yep.
You're talking about paint that lasts 3,000 years.
Yep.
You know, the sculpturing was so magnificent. To this day, they cannot figure out how the pyramids were built.
Right.
They cannot figure out what the tech. But the thing is, they think that the technology wasn't great back then. They don't realize they had technology that we don't even know about. They can't figure it out. how they built these pyramids so tall, so large. Was it slaves who built it? With the type of stoning they used, they cannot. They can do it probably with, you know, a lot of these stuff they use now. But that stuff didn't exist back then.
But
they
used
something else that we can't even figure out what it was. So when you're talking about trying to take this history, why everybody wants a piece of that ancient Egyptian history is because of that. Yeah. Everything started there. When it comes to everything that we do today, started right there, and everybody wants a piece of it.
Yeah. And see, you're talking about a people dedicated to excellence, committed. You see, they didn't do things haphazardly. In fact, older is better. The Great Pyramids, all those things were done in what? The third, fourth, and fifth dynasties. And we're talking about 25 more dynasties after that. We're talking about some things that happened thousands of years ago, but more deeply lasted thousands of years. European existence coming after Greece and Rome, the awakening of Europeans, their so-called Renaissance, and their exploitation or exploration, but no, exploitation of other people's land and their and materials and so forth is only 500 years old. 500 years. And look, somebody will marvel at all the things we've been to space and we've done this. That. Hell, to hell with that. Look at the damn world. Look how chaotic it is. Look at it, it's on the brink of destruction. Hell, Trump wanted to send a missile over to Iran. Because of shooting down a damn drone. He wanted to strike them. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I don't believe, well, they do what the hell they want to do. But to me, if this is supposed to be a democracy, the president of the United States just can't make war. He has to, there has to be some kinds of consultation and so forth, an agreement of the different branches of law, I thought. But then again, Trump has acted as if he is who he admires. Dictators, you know. So, but bump that. I don't want to even talk about his
ass. And the thing about like something like the Black Panther, as you know, Stan Lee came up with this theory, and it didn't really emerge up until this movie came out. And this his last put out before he died, which was Black Panther, was the greatest of his works. That's before. Spider-Man or X-Men or any of those other Marvel comics that you or the Avengers that you've grown to love, the Black Panther did the best out of all of them. And that opened my mind to, okay, the world is starting to be ready for this. They're ready for the Shaka Zulus. They're ready for Tutmosis. They're ready for Black Pharaoh. They're becoming to be ready for it now. And our woman now more than ever with the Black Pharaoh story, to see that beautiful black skinned woman.
That's right, brother.
Standing before the throne as Pharaoh for 20 years.
That's right.
Has never been done.
That's right.
And we need to get it done.
We got to, man. We got to. Imagine that image. Imagine all the sisters and hopefully the brothers. Who will have a different, bump that European perspective of, you know, suppressing women. We've had a history of complementarity of men and women. When you look at the statues of ancient and artwork of ancient Kemetic, artwork on the release on the walls and so forth, contrast that to the Greeks with statues of them with young boys, with other men. When they had the Olympics there, they were lovers of themselves, turned the women off. Turned the women off. The women went to the island of Lesbos. That was in the news about 4 years ago when they had all those refugees trying to escape Assyria and so forth in northern Africa through the Mediterranean. And they landed on the island of Lesbos. I was like, wow, the island of Lesbos, where you get the word lesbian. So I'm saying to you, we have the foundation, my brother. You are going to make a movie that substantiates. You're going to write a book and make a movie and a story that substantiates the greatness of African people. And it's not what you're not, you know, you're not going to be, you know, you embellish stuff. That's artistic licensing, right? You can embellish things, you know, but what you're going to present is not a myth. It's historic.
Correct. And we're not selling. And this is something that has been talked to me about. We're not going to sell our story to a film company so they can recreate what we're doing. No.
Thank you. Thank you, my
brother. If anything, I would license it, and I would have to be a part of the crew and the as a director of some sort in order for me to even relinquish the rights to Black Pharaoh to let a film company do something with it. And that's one of the things that we have to stand firm on.
Mm-hmm.
Is when we know we have something good, don't just sell out.
Right.
Don't just sell out for money.
That's right.
Because they'll take Black, before you know it, Black Pharaoh will be white or Arab Pharaoh before you know it. You know.
Now, you said something, I know we're winding down, only got a few more minutes left, but you said something about how the present day Egyptians feel about what you're doing. That they don't agree with what you're doing.
They don't. Well, I don't want to say all the Egyptians. The ones in the south, the Nubians. So the Nubian area, particularly, are very supportive. And there are some in Cairo who are very supportive as well, because they know this as a fact. But they've also come to believe that National Geographic propaganda,
mm-hmm. Right.
And they feel that their history is being stolen from them by African Americans and by Africans.
That's not their history. That's not theirs. They're latecomers. They're interlopers. You know, they didn't come in there until the 7th century. You know, and yes, they dominate and they control it now. You know, they're the ones who have the stores in the malls and so forth, selling cartouches and T-shirts and artwork and artifacts, but that is not who they are. They are not the temple builders. They are not the pyramid builders. They're not the ones that presented science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion. They're not the ones that had the first calendar. They're not the ones that charted that information to know that when this period of time of year, the Nile River will inundate, it will flood, and that's when we start doing our pyramid building. Well, that's when we go south. And quarry the stone and drag them up and just lay them, because you don't need no cement or mortar. They're not the ones. They're not the ones that understood that when the river recedes, that's when we got to come together to plant our crops, because hell, we live on a damn desert. No, they're not the ones. So, you know, they can get mad as they want to.
Uh-huh.
You know, but what you see though, Brother Kulu, and even to the point of how deep European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is, that is a global phenomenon. I remember after Nasser died, was the president, Sadat. And So they were going to make a movie on Sadat. And Lou Gossett Jr. was going to did play him. Sadat was furious. He was furious because he wanted some Caucasian looking person to portray him. You see, because that's the mindset. They hated to be dark. You know, they hated to be who and what they were. You see,
did you know that, you know, in government officials, when we label, I worked for the city of Buffalo. So when we, do applications for people from anywhere in Northern Africa, they have to be labeled Caucasian.
That's right. There was a brother I met at an ASCAC conference. ASCAC is the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, focusing on ancient Kemet. This brother came to the ASCAC conference. He was in Jet Magazine challenging the United States on his classification of him as Caucasian. The brothers clearly seen that he was African. He had a nice size fro. He was dark skinned, not real dark. I would say, I don't know, I can put, but anyway, he challenged them and he won, because you're right. And because they want that classification. They want that classification. They don't want to be classified as dark skin or African or black. They want that classification. That's how deep, you know, racism is on the planet. You see?
And I also wanted to just say one thing about this thing. You never heard of European American. You've never heard of Chinese American. You've never heard of Indian American. You hear African American. Why are people that are black skinned all labeled African American when there are black skinned people all over the world? In South America, yeah. In India, in Asia. There's black skinned people everywhere you go. So just because you're in America and you have black skin does not mean that you're African. You could be from anywhere.
Right.
Really, to be honest.
Yeah. That's true.
So, but all of us ultimately originate in Africa. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why.
For the most part,
but
that label is really just to classify black Americans. But in other places, like in South Africa, they don't even call themselves black people. Mm-hmm. Even though they are black, they don't call themselves
right.
black people. You know, so just
yeah.
to throw that up.
South Africa is another subject I definitely want to talk about, because the reality of South Africa is that Caucasians still run South Africa. But my point uh-huh. being is that we're African. I've been saying we're not black. That's a color. You know, that's a color. We're not that. Dr. John Henry Clark said, when you talk about a people, you always conjure up land, history, and culture. There's no, you know, we're African. And so I put forth is that we're African. Just like on the continent, your father was from Cameroon. So Africa is a noun. Africa describes a person, place, or thing. There's a word that goes in front of the noun, and that is what is being described. So your father would be a Cameroonian African. If I lived in Ghana, I'd be a Ghanaian African, Nigerian African. I live in the United States, I'm an American African. I live in the Caribbean, I'm a Jamaican African, Cuban African, Puerto Rican African. I claim Africa has the noun. And what goes in front of it is what kind of African that I am. Now, if I don't want to claim Africa, then I'll just be Cuban. I'll just be American. But if I look distinctively African, I'm African. And I claim that as an African person, not ashamedly, really proudly. You know? So I've been pushing forth this because people always talk about words have meaning. You damn right they do. But we don't want to deal with these words and understand their meaning and how they affect us and how they make us feel about ourselves. Brother, I got a minute left. Just give me some closing here. We'll maintain this conversation and contact. I'm excited about what you're doing, about the upcoming book, and more importantly, the film from that book. Go ahead, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I have a shout out to everybody that's out there. Make sure y'all go join the iBlackFeral Facebook page. Y'all going to see some controversy. That's all fine. Then y'all also make sure y'all go to the website, www.iblackferal.com. Hit that contact button. Make sure you leave your information so we can contact you, and you can join our email list, and we'll send you all the updates about iBlackFeral when it's coming out. Like I said before, if you got any great pictures that we can put out there of you in a fit looking like an African pharaoh, we will definitely blast that for you as well.
Right on. Brothers and sisters, we thank Brother Emmanuel Kulu Jr. and his efforts, and we're going to definitely support him. You have a voice here at any time that you want, dear brother. Just maintain the contact. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Brothers and sisters, thank you. Brothers and sisters, we end this program, like we end all of our program, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodio. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio family, peace to you. Have a blessed weekend.